Blog Talk Radio.
Michiamo apura kanu upright kaitnut ne ye akanbo nana som da medinde ojirapo kwesi ranahmpata aka akwamumaina maruka itipi mu ojirapo ojiramain mu. Greetings to all apura kani upright kaitnut people, meaning African black people. Today is akanbo nana som day, ancient authentic Akan ancestry religion day. My name is Ojirapo Kwesi Ranehmpata Akan, Ojirapo of the Akwamu Nation in North America, within Ojiramai, the purified nation Apurakani Apuraikaitnit, people in the Western Hemisphere. Yet I say we thank you for tuning into the broadcast tonight. We've opened up the chat room, and we should have said so. The Akwamu Nation in North America is Akwamu Mine, Amaruka Itifimu, Ojira Mine is the purified nation, Afrakani, Afrakani people in the Western Hemisphere. So we just wanted to make that correction. We've opened up the chat room. If you have any questions or comments and would like to interact in the chat room, you must log in as a user in order to interact. If you have any questions or comments on the phone line, simply hit the number 1 so that we can see that your hand is raised. For those who are new to the broadcast, we have 4 broadcasts on a weekly basis. We have Akanbo Nana Som, Ancient Authentic Akan Ancestry Religion on Joda on Monday nights, where we deal specifically with the Akan expression of Nana Som, of Ancestry Religion, first and foremost, because we are Akan, secondly, because of the misinformation being propagated regarding Akan Ancestry Religion, culture, cosmology, and so forth, not only from individuals in the Western Hemisphere, but also from individuals on the continent of Afuraka, Afurakai, who have been infected with white culture, white pseudo-religions such as Christianity, Islam, Judaism, Hebrewism, Hinduism, Buddhism, and so forth, and their fictional cartoon characters who never existed of any race or of any form whatsoever, including Jesus, Yeshua, Muhammad, Abraham, Isaac, Ishmael, Moses, Yahweh, Allah, Buddha, Brahman, and so forth. All these fictional cartoon characters, because of those infections, some of our people have infected the fabric of their culture, internalized that infection, and therefore their presentation of Akan ancestry religion is an infected presentation. So we deal with ancient, authentic Akan ancestry religion, which roots us in our origins in ancient Kanat, the ancient Khan land, the first land, foremost land, which is a title of ancient Nubia. Some of our people migrated from the Khan land or Kanat thousands of years ago after the fall of ancient Kemet and northern Kanat over 2,000 years ago. We relocated in the western part of the continent after that migration, reestablished the Kanat Empire or the Ganat Empire a couple of thousand years ago. Hundreds of years subsequent to that, because of invasion, some of our people migrated from that region further south to reestablish themselves in the savannah and forest belt regions and reestablish Akanna civilization in the forest belt and the savannah regions. Centuries later, some of our people were taken from those regions and forced into the Western Hemisphere during the Mussu Okeke, the Great Perversity, the enslavement era. We thus ended up in North, Central, South America, the Caribbean, and Europe as a result of the enslavement era, but we maintained our ancestral religious practices. Thus, in South America, for example, Akan ancestral religion is called Winti, from the Akan term Winti. In Jamaica, Akan ancestral religion is called Obia, from the Akan term Obai. In North America, in the United States, Akan ancestry religion is called Hoodoo, from the Akan term Undu, meaning medicine from roots, trees, plant life, root work. It also means to become heavy with the spirit through spirit possession and spirit communication. We find these same terms from the Akan language that are used in North America, in the United States, Hoodoo, with the same meanings, also found in our ancestral language of Kanat, ancient Nubia and Kemet, so-called Egypt. In the Medutu, the hieroglyphs, you find that Undu means medicine from roots, trees, plant life. Undu also means to become heavy with the spirit through spirit possession, spirit communication, undu also means the offerings given at the shrines of the deities and ancestral spirits, the hudu or undu that we give to the deities and ancestral spirits through ritual invocation and ritual evocation and so forth. The altars themselves are also called undu as well. There's a class of deities called the undu spirits as well. So we're dealing with this ancient term, this ancient practice that's born of our blood circles. We maintained our ancestral religious practices when we were forced into the Western Hemisphere, and it is through the maintenance of our ancestral religious practices that we were guided and empowered by our nanano nsama for our spiritually cultivated ancestors and ancestors, and the deities, the forces in nature connected to our blood circle, guided and empowered by them on the best means by which to wage war against the whites and their offspring, massacre the whites and their offspring, and force the end of enslavement in the Western Hemisphere. We gained this advantage through the use of metal armaments, the fashioning and crafting of metal armaments for warfare, but also through the use of chemical and biological warfare, root work being the precedent established for that practice. And we have that ancestral obligation to stand on the shoulders of our ancestors and ancestors today to build upon that foundation, utilizing metal armaments to wage war against the whites and their offspring, as well as using root work for chemical and biological warfare to be waged against the whites and their offspring. So this is what we deal with on Akanpo Nanasom, dealing with Akan ancestry religion, inclusive of hoodoo and so forth, cosmology, culture, ritual practice, and so forth. On Binada, Abinada Tuesday nights, we have Ojira, which means purification. We deal with the purification of concepts, culture, ritual practice. We deal with ancestry religion in general, not just the Akan expression, but ancestry religion in general, wherever our people exist in the world. We deal with how ancestry religion impacts every aspect of our lives. Ancestral religion, or Nana Som, as we call it, Afurakani, Afurakani, the African ancestral religion. The general term we use is Nana Som. In essence, is the ritual incorporation of divine law and the ritual restoration of divine balance. That means through ritual we incorporate those things, objects, deeds, and entities we need to incorporate in order to harmonize our thoughts, intentions, and actions with divine order. And through ritual we reject those things, objects, deeds, and entities we need to reject in order to restore balance to our thoughts, intentions, and actions, and thus realign ourselves with divine order. So the ritual incorporation of divine law and the ritual restoration of divine balance, these are the expansive and contractive poles of ancestry religion. We state that Ojira, purification, operationalizes Nana Song. Purification operationalizes our practice of ritually incorporating law and ritually restoring divine balance to our lives. It is by this means that we are able to execute our divine function in creation and maintain our culture, our way of life. Our way of life is the divine acceptance, the divine law or love of order, and divine rejection, divine hate of disorder. We accept that which is harmonious, we reject or repel or hate that which is disharmonious. This is our culture, our way of life as Afurakani, Afurakani people. Divine law, love, and divine hate are the expansive and contractive poles of divine order. So we accept or in law with or in love with that which is in harmony with divine order, and we hate or reject that which would other place us out of harmony with divine order. Through ancestral religion, we're able to execute our function in creation and align every thought, intention, and action with divine order every moment of every day. When we make legitimate mistakes, we engage the ritual process to incorporate divine law and restore divine balance so we can get back on track with aligning every thought, intention, and action with divine order every moment of every day. This is our culture, Afurakani, Afurakani people. So this is how ancestry religion impacts every aspect of our lives. So we deal with the purification, Ojira, purification of concepts, culture, ritual practice, cosmology, and so forth, all these various things. That's on that broadcast on Tuesday night, Benada, Abinada, Tuesday night. on Wednesday night, Awukuda Akuada, which is Wednesday, we have Egua Marketplace, where we showcase Afro-Akani, Afro-Akani businesses, organizations, and institutions, those who are serving the Afro-Akani, Afro-Akani community in a positive capacity, those who maintain their ancestral religious values in the context of their service to the community. We have showcased many Afro-Akani, Afro-Akani businesses, organizations, and institutions. We will have others coming on as well. You can see those or hear those broadcasts in our archives and so forth. We also deal with the philosophical foundation of economic development rooted in our ancestral religious values. We have published our OCOM economic development model, which is an approach to economic development rooted in our ancestral religious values. It is therefore a holistic approach to economic development. And within that publication, we have our Starve the Beast and Feed the Pride operation, which means you make an assessment on a weekly basis to determine what funds you would have potentially wasted with the whites and their offspring, and then we starve the beast and feed the pride. That means that we shift those funds away from the white businesses and direct them to the business, organization, or institution of the week. And we showcase one Afro-Akani, Afro-Akani business, organization, or institution per week for optimal capital infusion. So we deal with that on Wednesday night, Egua Marketplace Day. On Yauda, Thursday night, also called Yada Abada, we have Amain Sim Affairs of the Nation. On that broadcast, we deal with specific issues that are confronting us as an Omain, as a nation, specifically as Ojiramain, the purified nation, Afro-Akani, Afro-Akani people in the Western Hemisphere. Because we understand what a nation is in the true sense, from a proper definition, what an Omain or nation is, which is a living, breathing entity, which is governed by specific forces in nature, just like an organ is a living, breathing entity. Its children, which are the cells, serve interdependently. They function interdependently, but they serve the greater organ of which they are a component part and the energy forces that govern that organ. We are cells within a greater organal structure, which is an Omain, a nation, which is governed by specific forces in creation. And when we live in harmony with one another and the energy forces that govern this collective, then we understand what a nation is. We have been forced into the Western Hemisphere, but at some point we were directed to coalesce in a specific region of the Western Hemisphere. In this region of the Earth Mother's body, we were directed by our ancestresses and ancestors, our Nanano Nsamanfo, our spiritually cultivated ancestresses and ancestors, to coalesce in a specific region of the Western Hemisphere upon the Earth Mother's body, to blend ancestral blood circles in this region so we can bring ancestresses and ancestors back through these blended blood circles, different Afro-Akani, Afro-Akani people blending blood circles, learning how to interface with the unique expression of energy of the Earth Mother divinities, Asaseyafu and Asaseya, as they manifest in this region of their body in the Western Hemisphere of the planet, dealing with the unique expression of the Abosom, the Orisha, the Vodou, the deities, the Ntorotu, the divinities as they manifest in this region of the Earth Mother's body, dealing with the plant life, animal life, mineral life as they manifest in this region, unique expressions of plant life, animal life, mineral life, and their unique spirit totems for food. We utilize them as well as medicine and so forth, dealing with these unique expressions from this region of the Earth Mother's body, this confluence of events has allowed us to incorporate that kind of energy through blended blood circles and forge a unique locative identity, a unique expression of Afro-Akani, Afro-Akani culture, people, cosmology, religious practice, based on our interfacing with this region of the Earth Mother divinities, this region of their bodies, and interfacing with these Earth Mother divinities and everything that deals with, the ramifications of that. So we have a unique expression of culture, a unique religious expression, a unique approach to dealing with our issues as Afro-Akani, Afro-Akani people. So this is what we deal with on Amain Sim Affairs of the Nation, whatever issues are confronting us as a nation, Afro-Akani, Afro-Akani people in the Western Hemisphere, the purified nation, Ojiramain. This is what we deal with. Speaking of that, coming up June 24th, which is an Awusida Sunday, June 24th, in less than 2 weeks, is our third annual Ojiramain Afashe which means our Ojiramai, the Purified Nation Festival Conference, Purified Nation of Apurakani, Apurakani people in the Western Hemisphere Conference, our third annual conference, where we deal with Amaniye nationism, an approach to nation building, Amaniye Sesu nation building, and restoration from an ancestral religious values perspective, from a holistic perspective, with a proper understanding of what a nation is. So we deal with Amaniye nationism, which we show is the purification of nationalism. So we're dealing with the seven principal values of nation building, and we will have presentations dealing with the different aspects of nation building. We will have our Egua marketplace with our vendors so you can shop, including a vegan food vendor and so forth, with different Apurakani, Apurakani vendors. You can shop all day. It's an all-day event. It's a free event, as all of our conferences and presentations are. Wherever we go in the country, when we have presentations, we have conferences, all of our events are free. And we also give away a free copy of one of our books to all attendees. We've given away over 2,000 books now at our different presentations around the country for free to our attendees. This is our third annual event. We have three conferences per year. We have Hoodoo Mind, the Hoodoo Nation Festival, in October, dealing specifically with the Hoodoo tradition, which is our kind ancestral religion in North America. In March, we have Eschi Sign, Ancestral Religious Reversion, where we deal with ancestral religion in general, not just the Hoodoo tradition, but the various Apurakani, Apurakani, the African ancestral religious traditions that have been preserved in our blood circles here in the Western Hemisphere. We deal with the Hoodoo tradition, which is Akan, the Juju tradition, which is Yoruba, the Voodoo tradition, which is Ebe and Fon, the Wanga tradition, which is Ovambo, which includes the Gullah constellation, Ngangan tradition, which is Fon, the Bambara tradition, which is the Grigri tradition, and so forth. Different individuals from different groups presenting on these different aspects of ancestral religious practice and culture. So we have that in March. And then in June, around the March, that's around the winter, spring equinox, and around June, around the summer solstice, we have Ojiramai dealing with nation building, restoration, Amaniye nationism, the purification of nationalism. We're shoring up and dealing with these programs, educational, medicine, seven principal values of nation building, methods of food production and preservation, methods of curing disease, establishing a military structure, establishing institutions, educational institutions, training institutions, cultural institutions, ritual institutions, and so forth, establishing sound systems of governance and jurisprudence, the manufacturing and building of homes on acquired land, and the manufacturing of clothing. So these seven principal values of nation building, restoration, is what we address in the Ojiramai Purified Nation Conference. That is June 24th. You can go to our website. Registration is free. Registration is required. You can register through our link on our website. Of course, as all of our events, this is true of all of our events, the Ojiramai Afashe, the Ojiramai Conference, the Purified Nation Conference, is open to Apurakani, Apurakani, African Black people only. And that is true of all of our presentations, all of our conferences, all of our retreats, everything that we do. So you can get all of that information on the Ojiramai and Afashe page, and we will also be giving away a free copy of our soon-to-be-published Ojiramai Afashe book, which will be released on the day of the event. And as we do at all of our conferences, we give away a free copy of the book for that piece. So as we said earlier, if you have any questions or comments in the chat room, you must log in as a user in order to interact. If you have any questions or comments on the phone line, simply hit the number 1 so that we can see that your hand is raised. So for tonight's broadcast, we're dealing with the divinity Kehit, also called, pronounced in different dialects, in the Coptic dialect, Kehit, Kopit, or Kope, or Kobea, and so forth, the female Abosom, the female divinity goddess of libation. We're also dealing with rain, water, divination in the Hoodoo tradition. So, we want to go first to our publication, Uben Shang, the Ancestor Summons. Uben Shang, the Ancestor Summons is the first publication that we released independently in December of 12,998, which is the Gregorian calendar. December 21st is the winter solstice, 1997. So this is the 21st year of the Uben Shang, the Ancestral Summons, and it deals with the ritual practices that we engage in and their functionality. We do not engage in any ritual practice that is purely symbolic. We are always receiving, processing, and transmitting energy in a measurable fashion, a quantifiable fashion, rooted in divine consciousness. So everything we engage in, whether it's libation or ancestral communication, spirit possession, deity possession, dealing with shrines, oracular divination, talismans, amulets, ritual song, ritual dance, ritual prayer, ritual chant, giving offerings, whatever we engage in, there's no such thing as symbol without substance. Every function, every ritual we engage in is dealing with a process whereby we receive, process, and transmit energy in a measurable fashion, a quantifiable fashion. So this is the 21st year of the Uben Shang, 21st anniversary of solar return. This is also very important for this year, because this year also we will be releasing our film dealing with divination, Amarukapo Adebisa Ajumadi, African American Ancestral Divination Project. We are in the process of completing, wrapping up filming right now. We started back in April with regard to the filming piece in Florida, and then we moved on to New Orleans, and we're going through Alabama and Georgia and Mississippi and so forth. We have a couple more places to complete the filming, and we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show, but our goal is to finish the filming by the end of this month and complete the film so we can have it for ready for release by the end of June, beginning of July, very soon. So we're working on that, and we have our crowdfunding effort for that. Of course, you can support that effort, because we do need that support so we can complete that film so we can release it to the community. But Uben Shang, the Ancestor Summons, we'll put a link in the chat room right quick, but you can go to our webpage and download the book for free. All of our 30 books, including Uben Shang, the ebook versions, are free downloads from our website. The very first piece, very first quote unquote essay in this book is the one that we're going to deal with. Many of you have read this book before. You've seen the two-part series that we did on Ustream, where we went through the entire book in detail. If you have not, that's of course on our YouTube page. But the first piece is called Goddess Pours Libation in Your Honor. And as you read through the Uben Shang, you will see that the message, how it's delivered, is we are listening to the Nananom Unsemampo, the spiritually cultivated ancestresses and ancestors. They gave us the subject matter. They gave us the title. They gave us what they wanted the community to hear. And we basically scribe that information. So as you read it, there's a question and answer format in the way it's presented. This is the way the Nananom Unsemampo presented this information to us, and this is the way we wrote it down. So sometimes there are questions and answers that follow and so forth. So we're going to go through this piece. But the reason we're going through this piece is because Kepit or Kebea, she is the goddess of libation. So when you look in ancient Kemet, and when you look at the term Keb, it means to cool or coolness. It also means libation and so forth, that release of water. It'll say she's the libationist goddess and so libation goddess and so forth. But we're going to get in some detail about who she is, what her function and creation is, because all they know about is she's the goddess of libation or the goddess of the cool water, the firmament, and so forth. And she refreshes the king, you know, after he makes his transition and he's, you know, transforming to a spiritually cultivated ancestor or the queen mother, a spiritually cultivated ancestress. She's one of the spiritual forces that deal with that. She's the daughter of Anpu and Anput. But they don't know who she really is outside of that and what her function is. But anytime you pour libation, if you're an Afrakani person, no matter what tradition you're in, you're actually invoking Kepit or Kebea. So this is the first piece in the Uben Shem, because this is the first thing that happens in creation. In reality, this is the first thing that takes place in our ritual practices, especially in the Hoodoo tradition, the Akan tradition. You know, libation is utilized very copiously, frequently. In many occasions, it is a form of prayer and is used very extensively throughout the cult. So first and foremost, it says, Goddess pours libation in your honor. And we're talking about the nature and function of this ritual practice. The particular goddess we're talking about is Kepit or Kebea in this piece. It says evaporation, condensation, precipitation is a cycle by which water is drawn into heaven and falls to rejuvenate earth. It is a process of redistribution. Not only is a lake or ocean from which the water is drawn replenished, but the dry earth, which requires the benefits of water, is also nourished. The water's properties work to regenerate earth's functions, resulting in a coming forth or manifestation of that which was in the earth. Spirit raining down in this form thus renews the potential for growth subsisting in earth. This is libation. Is your physical vehicle of earth? Does it not contain copper, iron, zinc, magnesium, and every element that exists in the soil? From the beginning, was not the physical sperm, the ovum, a magnet for your spirit through whose union you became manifest on the physical plane? If spirit rains down in the form of water to nourish earth, and you exist as spirit through earth on the physical plane, then you are nourished by spirit's rain. You are renewed by spirit's rain. Your potential for growth and development is dependent on spirit coming in this form. You need the libation of the goddess. She pours for you. She pours water in your honor. Where is your spirit when it leaves the physical plane? Is some aspect of your spirit attracted to earth? Was not your physical vehicle a miniature earth? If miniature earth has the power to attract and fix your spirit, now that it has totally disintegrated, should not the planet earth have the power to attract and fix your spirit within its cosmic jurisdiction? Have you come yet to consciously expand your awareness of your spirit body beyond the protective nurturing power of earth, to be nurtured consciously under the cosmic jurisdiction of other celestial bodies' powers until such time you are nurtured by earth? Goddess pours libation to nourish earth as a part of the cycle of regeneration. She renews the physical potential inherent in earth. Earth then yields fruits for all physical bodies, and you then appropriate a portion of those fruits to feed your physical body. Yet, if the libation of goddess also renews the spiritual potential inherent in earth, then her libation perpetually renews the potential energy of all ancestral spirits while they are under earth's jurisdiction. Do you not have the right then to appropriate a portion of her libation and direct it towards renewing the potential inherent in your ancestral spirits, whose fruits of experience and wisdom will renew your awareness and nurture your development? Who speaks against libation? Are you of God? Are God and goddess two sides of the same coin? Are you then of goddess? Should you not pour libation then in honor of the ancestral spirits? If you are a goddess, then you have a right and responsibility to place yourself in the process. It is more than symbolic. So when we're talking about this piece, first and foremost, physically, water coming down in the form of rain, that is the original libation. The rain redistributes the water from oceans, lakes, rivers, streams, and so forth to the dry portions of earth that need that libation. And then it rejuvenates the earth so that what is in the potential within earth, the produce that is in earth and potential can come forward, it can sprout and so forth, and the fruits of that produce can be manifest and we can utilize that to feed ourselves and so forth. It also deals with the trees and the release of, you know, nitrogen and everything else in the atmosphere. This is what we're dealing with, that redistribution of water for the benefit of Earth, the production of produce, and we can appropriate a portion of that produce to feed ourselves. Now, that's on the physical side. You're dealing with the spiritual energy, and of course, water is a conductor of energy and so forth. When we make our transition and our spirits separate from our bodies, if you look at your physical body, it is a miniature Earth. Of course, everything that exists within Earth exists within your body: copper, magnesium, zinc, iron, all the various elements and so forth. When the sperm and ovum united, that zygote formed, it had the power as a magnet to draw your spirit to it and attract and fix your spirit. Your spirit has been attached to this body that's been growing and developing and so forth ever since you were conceived physically. Your physical body has the capacity to hold your spirit. Your spirit takes up residence in this physical miniature Earth for 70, 80, 90, 100 plus years and so forth. And then at some point, transition takes place, death occurs, your spirit separates from the physical body. The body is buried, returns to Earth, and so forth. If your physical body, the miniature Earth, had the capacity, the power to attract and fix your spirit for 100 plus years, once that body has disintegrated, been buried and returned and reconnected to the larger Earth Mother and so forth, Asasaya in this particular capacity, if the miniature Earth had the capacity to hold and fix your spirit, attract and fix your spirit for that great period of time, then once your spirit has been liberated from the physical body because of the death process, then the greater Earth Mother, of course, has the capacity to attract and hold and fix your spirit. So the various ancestresses and ancestors have a connection to the greater Earth Mother and so forth. We don't just fly off to other planets and other solar systems and so forth. We have a relationship with Asasiafua and Asasiya, the Earth Mother divinities. And because we have a relationship with them, we are attracted and drawn to them. This is how we're designed. If we were designed to be connected to other planets or other solar systems and so forth, we would do that. But that's not how we are designed. We're designed in relationship to Asasiafua and Asasiya, the fertile and barren Earth Mother divinities, and therefore when our spirit separates from our miniature Earth, the physical body, and it's buried and rejoins and is immersed within the Earth Mother divinity, then our spirits are still attracted to the greater Earth Mother divinity's body. And so we're connected to this planet, of course, naturally. So when the water is poured and the, you know, comes from libation, from the rain and so forth, it regenerates Earth functions, not only for the produce that rises out of the earth and sprouts from the earth and so forth, but all of the spirits who are connected to the Earth Mother divinity, these ancestral spirits who lived in harmony with order in just a basic fundamental fashion. Of course, non-Afrikanu, non-Afrikaidu, non-African, non-black people do not live in harmony with order. They are spirits of disorder. They incarnate as spirits of disorder without exception, whether they're white Europeans, white Americans, white Hindus, white Arabs, white Asians, white pseudo-Native Americans, white Hispanics, white Latinos, white non-black people, period. They incarnate as spirits of disorder without exception. All of them who ever existed, all of them who exist, and all of them who ever will exist until we make them extinct, will always incarnate as spirits of disorder. So they have no capacity to communicate with the Earth Mother divinities or any force of nature, any deity, any Aboso, Marisha, Vodou, and so forth. They have no capacity to communicate with any spiritually cultivated ancestor or ancestress. They cannot become spiritually cultivated ancestresses and ancestors. They don't have a class of spiritually cultivated ancestresses and ancestors, so they become earthbound without a relationship with the Earth Mother divinity. They have no energy connection to that force of nature. They become earthbound, no different than gravity drawing an element that's thrown up in the air, whether it's a solid object, an inanimate object, and it falls back to Earth. It connects to Earth, but it doesn't have a conscious relationship where it's communicating with the divinity of the Earth Mother and so forth. A piece of scrap metal and so forth, it's just bound by the laws of gravity. The whites and their offspring, when they make their transition, they become earthbound with regard to not going, of course, to another planet and so forth, that kind of nonsense. They're earthbound on a lower level of the spirit realm. They wander on a lower level of the spirit realm until it's time when they're drawn back into the womb of their descendants and so forth. The difference with our people, when we make our transition, we are connected to the Earth Mother Divinity. We communicate with the Earth Mother Divinities, Asase Afua and Asase Ya, who are called Asase Nebetepet and Asase Nebetepet in ancient Kemet, called Onile and Yewa in the Yoruba tradition and so forth. We also have a relationship with the forces in nature, and we operate in the Sekhetetep, the divine field of peace, also called Asamando in the Akan tradition. We're in a region of the spirit realm where the whites and offspring have no access to, that they're repelled from, where we're dealing with the spiritually cultivated ancestral community, and we're living in a community of ancestresses and ancestors in a peaceful community. This is why in the Akan tradition, there's a proverb that says, if you would like to understand the nature of the ancestral realm of Asamando, consider the dream state, the Adai state or the dream state. When you're dreaming, your body is laying flat in the bed and dark. In the dark, there's no sound, there's no light, no movement. But you're seeing entities, you're interfacing with entities, you're hearing, smelling, you're experiencing something. Your eyes are closed, there's darkness, there's no light, but you are seeing luminous images. You're having a relationship and interaction and interfacing with luminous entities and so forth. The same is true in the after-death state. The body is lying in the grave and so forth, but the spirit is communicating with other disembodied spirits. We go to the ancestral realm, Asamando, and we dwell amongst our ancestors as an ancestors for a number of generations until it's time for us to return. And then before we reincarnate or are drawn into a physical womb, we are first drawn up to Nyamewa, Nyame, Amenet, Amen, the Great Mother, Great Father, Supreme Being. We are given our Krawa, our soul, divine consciousness, which is a deity to dwell in the head region of our spirit body. We're given a divine function executing creation. And now that we're spirits that have a soul, a ka or kayak, a kra or krawa, an ori nu attached to our head region, that deity that is assigned to us by the Supreme Being to direct us throughout the course of our lives, a deity we can communicate with that dwells in the head region, a male divinity if you're male, a female divinity if you're female, that divinity is installed within the head region of our spirit body, just like your physical brain is installed in the head region of your physical body and directs all of your actions. You have a spiritual force that dwells in the head region within our spirit bodies as Afurakani, Afurakani people, and only Afurakani, Afurakani people are assigned to divinity and can communicate with the divinity that dwells in our head regions because we're the only ones that have that. That's what distinguishes us from all other quote-unquote races. So then we're sent back into the ancestral realm, and then eventually we are drawn into a womb to be reborn through Bebra reincarnation, to be born into the world once again through one of our descendants. So this is what takes place. But when we make our transition, the spirit separates from the body, and we are in the spirit realm, but we're still connected to the Earth Mother Divinities. We're not going to other planets, as we said, and so forth. So when the libation is poured, not only do the physical aspects of Earth become rejuvenated and the crops and the potential crops, you know, are nourished and so forth so that eventually they can sprout and fully flower and so forth and bring forth their fruits, but also the energy within the water, within the libation, that conductor of energy, that energy of Kepit or Kebea, she transmits that rejuvenating energy, that revivifying energy through the water source. And when that water hits the earth, the energy within the water connects with all of those ancestresses and ancestors, those Afurakani, Afurakani ancestresses and ancestors who are connected to the Earth Mother Divinity. And that's, of course, our people, our grandmothers, grandfathers, great-grandfathers, and so forth. So just as you appropriate a portion of libation, for example, you appropriate a portion of the rainwater through irrigation so you can water your own crops. Of course, the rain is falling everywhere. So you appropriate a portion of that water so you can direct it to your specific crops, your specific farmland and so forth, your specific garden, whereas the water is falling on the entire city or the entire area, the entire region. You need a portion of that. You gather that or appropriate that, and you direct that water to your crops so you can generate those fruits within your region for you and your family and so forth in the same fashion, because of the energy that's operant through that libation, through that rainfall and so forth, coming from Kebeha, from that divinity. We appropriate a portion of that libation, and we direct a portion of that through us pouring libation so we can direct that energy to our ancestors as an ancestor. When the rain is falling and her energy is moving through that rain, it's affecting and regenerating the energy of all the ancestors and ancestors who are connected to the Earth Mother Divinity in general, revivifying and replenishing their energy. But then we take a portion of that rainfall, we capture that, and redirect it specifically to our shrines, to our ancestors and ancestors, as well as the Abosom, the divinities who are connected to us by blood, into their shrines, so we can redirect that energy specifically to our people and those divinities connected to us, so we can revivify our people, revivify that energy, strengthen that spiritual connection and so forth, so we can develop that relationship, strengthen that bond, so we can be more receptive to them. We can be receptive for spirit possession, so they can operate through our physical bodies and communicate and heal and direct and teach and admonish and so forth. So this is what's happening with regard to that notion of libation. Not only does it benefit the physical aspect of earth, the dry earth, so that produce can continue to come forward, but it also deals with those spirits who are connected to earth, and the energy within the water stimulates, revivifies them, nourishes them, rejuvenates them, and we take a portion of that and redirect it to our own people, to our own clans, so we can regenerate, rejuvenate, and nourish them as well, revivify their energy and so forth. And when we pour that libation, when we engage in ritual invocation as we are pouring the libation, and that ritual invocation, ritual song, ritual chants and so forth, those sound vibrations stimulate the energy within the water, and it's a direct energy link from those invocations through the water to the divinity who's operating through that rainwater and so forth. Then we receive her energy, we process her energy, and we transmit her energy. Just like you receive rainfall, it hits your body, it rejuvenates you, cools you off, replenishes you, and so forth. You receive the energy offering through that rainfall coming directly from this divinity, Kebeha. Receive that energy within your spirit body. You process it, and then you transmit that energy so you can regenerate and revivify and strengthen the bond of energy you have with your own ancestors and ancestors and the Abosom. This is what libation actually is. Every time we are engaged in the libation process, we're taking part in that greater cycle. We're invoking Kephit or Kebeha on a consistent basis, whether we say her name or not. As soon as we grab that vessel and begin to pour, we're invoking her through that process when we're in alignment and so forth. And of course, once again, that's Afurakani, Afurakani people only. So when we're talking about this, saying the goddess, when you read through the Ubin Shang, and sometimes we say god or goddess, we're talking about a specific divinity, male or female, and different, depending on the context. We're talking about one specific divinity here or a different specific divinity there. We're talking about, you know, who's dealing with what aspect of creation they're dealing with. We're not just saying god or goddess in general. We're talking about the great mother and great father, goddess god. We're talking about Amen and Amenet. We're talking about the creator and creatress. We're talking about Ra and Ra'et. Here we're talking about goddess pours libation in your honor. We're talking about Kebhit or Kebea, whatever male or female divinity we're talking about. You can find that in the context. And of course, we've done the broadcasts that talk about exactly who those deities are. So within the physical body, her shrine within the physical body is those eccrine glands, the sweat glands that release water to cool the body. And that's part of her regenerative process as well. So, and there's a difference with respect to us and all other people. So, just as you have that evaporation, condensation, precipitation, and so forth, that cycle on Earth, and the term keb or kepa or koba or keba, depending on the dialect, means coolness, refreshing, and it shows the libation base, the nimset vessel, the libation base that we show, pouring libation and so forth. That's the term used in ancient Tibet. And keba or kebeha or kubeha, kebhit, different pronunciations, gubeya and akan, the same term and so forth. It's talking about releasing that water and so forth. So when you see that the vessel and the release of water from the vessel, and it's a purificatory process, when you look in the text of ancient Kemet and they're talking about kebhit or kebeha, purifying or refreshing the king or the queen mother when they make their transition, and rejuvenating them through that divine water and so forth so they can be revivified. And once they're revivified and restored and strengthened and revitalized, now they can connect with the deities and the ancestral spirits and the ancestral realm and take up residence and their firm place, you know, a firm seat, become firmly seated or rooted in the ancestral realm so they can function as spiritually cultivated ancestresses and ancestors to assist us in our growth and development here, their descendants. But when you see that in the text of ancient Kemet, and it goes all the way back to the Meru pyramid text talking about Kebeha and so forth, you'll see that the Medut, the hieroglyph, is showing the vessels, showing the water, showing the water lines and so forth, coolness, refreshing, water, purification. So within the physical body, you have that same process. When your body becomes overheated, of course, there's this ritual process that takes place where your body, through the eccrine glands or the so-called sweat glands, dealing specifically with the eccrine glands, releases water. And, of course, that water releases, is, you know, manifests on the surface of the body. And then an evaporation takes place. And when the evaporation takes place, a couple of things are happening. Of course, if you read about evaporation and perspiration and so forth, and water body releases water, and that release of water once the evaporation takes place, that helps to cool your body. First and foremost, when the water is released from the body, that helps to cool the body down if you're overheated. And then when the evaporation takes place, because of course, when water, you know, shows up on the skin, and if there's a breeze, once that breeze hits the water, then it feels cool on your skin and so forth. But then if it's not too humid outside, then the water evaporates from your skin. And that evaporation process allows some of the heat from your body that was within that water to rise up and leave the skin, and it helps to cool your body down. So that evaporation process, the same evaporation, condensation, precipitation process, that evaporation process that the goddess Kehit governs on Earth, she's also governing that process of releasing water, that libation, releasing that water through your body and so forth. And then that evaporation process helps to cool Kehit, cool your body down, refresh your body, Kehit and so forth. And once you're cooled and refreshed, you restore balance, because if you become overheated, then there's imbalance. If you become too cold, of course, there's imbalance. But when you become overheated, but then the coolness comes, that helps to restore balance and equilibrium. And when you have that equilibrium, then you have the capacity to be receptive to the messages and the direction of the ancestors and ancestors, the Nananom and Samamfo, and the deities, the Abosom. And then you can attune to them. You can access that energy that you've inherited from them, and you can execute your function in the world. You can restore order to your life when disorder is manifest. You can incorporate divine law. You can learn what you need to learn or incorporate certain things or energy complexes you need to overcome perceived obstacles and so forth when you reach that point of equilibrium. When you become disequilibrated or out of harmony with order, then you must restore balance, and we engage the ritual process to incorporate law and restore divine balance in our lives, as we said earlier. So Kebhit or Kebeha allows us to do that. That's physiologically. Now, that evaporation of the sweat, the perspiration from your body, once the water is on your skin and the evaporation process takes place, then there's a release of the heat from your body, and that heat joins with the moisture in the sky, and this is where Kip Heat reigns. They talk about her being in the firmament or the moisture in the sky and so forth. That evaporation or that heat or that evaporated energy leaving your body and reconnecting with the great source of vapor within the sky and so forth, that is direct connection from your energy, from your physical body to the great source of vapor in the sky. That's a direct energy connection. However, the divine living energy, that's just through the water and the vapor and so forth. But the divine living energy coming from your Ba or your Ba'at, your divine living energy connected through that water source, just like water is a conductor of electricity. In the same fashion, that water that's connected to you through vapor connects with the water in the sky, in the heavenly regions and so forth. That's a direct connection, just like the breath leaving your lungs and rejoining with the air in the atmosphere. That's a direct connection of the great mass of air surrounding the entire planet, also reaching into your lungs, so you have a direct connection to everything surrounding the planet, but also the divine living energy that's manifest, that Kehit carries within her spirit body, that she transmits through the rain. When you release that vapor through perspiration, through her release within your body, through that libation that's coming out of your body, when you release that water coming out of your body, which is, you know, her shrine within your body, then you're also releasing a unit of, or some units of energy within that water itself. And once that those units of energy are released through that water, through that evaporation process, that release of energy from you through the water connects with the energy of Kehit within the water or the vapor surrounding the planet and so forth. And now there's a direct connection between the miniature source of energy from you to the great source of that water, vapor, energy of her. Now there's a direct link made. It's no different than if you take a deep breath and close your mouth, then you have a pocket of air in your lungs, but because your mouth is closed, that pocket of air is cut off from the greatest source of air that surrounds the planet. But then when you open your mouth and release that air and then breathe in, then there's a full circuit. The air that's surrounding the planet is also entering into your nostrils, through your trachea, and into your lungs, and there's a full circuit that's unbroken of air moving in and out of your system. That small pocket of air within you that's keeping you vitalized is directly connected to the great source of air around the entire planet, and now you can be animated by that air. In the same fashion, the great source of energy, a contractive cooling force, a magnetic force of energy within the vapor, within the realm or shrine of Kehit around the planet, that great source of contractive cooling magnetic energy is reaching from that source with into your body through the libation that comes forward from the eccrine glands, from the sweat glands and so forth, and that water vapor that comes on your skin that's released into the air and so forth. That release connects the vapor from you to the great source of vapor in the sky. Divine living energy of cool, contractive, magnetic energy of Kehit that's coming through you is connected to her, the great source of that cool, magnetic, contractive energy around the planet. And now you have a direct, full circuit of energy circulating through you. You have a full circuit of contractive, cool, magnetic, refreshing energy that rejuvenates and recalibrates you. This is why we pour libation, so we can reconnect with that cool, contractive, magnetic force of energy, get into that cycle, get into that circuit of energy. It makes us receptive. It pulls off negative debris, just like water is a conductor of electricity. When you take a bath and you purify yourself and you use the water to pull the debris off your body physically, in the same fashion, when you use water, once it's energized through ritual invocation, and it has that energy moving through it, you take that water that's a conductor of electricity and you use it to cleanse yourself, but it also pulls the negative energetic debris off of you, just like the water pulls the regular physical debris off of you and cleanses you of that. Energized water through ritual invocation, energized water pulls the negative energetic debris from other individuals, their projections, their perversities, as well as some negative conditionings that you have held on to, which generates negative energetic debris that can control your thoughts or influence your thoughts or your desires, manifesting as lust or malice and so forth. That purified, energized water can pull that negative debris off of you. Therefore, you become equilibrated. You become more receptive. You become more in tune with the messages coming from the Nananom and Samampo, the ancestral spirits that are spiritually cultivated, and the Abosom, the deities, forces in nature, and therefore you can engage that communication. This is why libation is key. It's the first thing that takes place when we have events or gatherings and so forth. The first thing we do is pour libation. The first release of sound vibrations and ritual energy and so forth at the beginning of creation, Amen and Amenet, releasing the Ka, the great black substance of space, and energizing that black substance through the expansion and contraction of Hehu and Hehut and Nun and Nunet and so forth, later giving birth to Ra and Ra'at. That's a form of libation as well, a primordial libation, that release of sound vibrations that created the black substance of space, which is a great thick black fluid substance and so forth. That is the primordial origin of what would later become divinity Kevhid. Now, we talk about Kevhid being the daughter of Anpu and Anput, the jackal-headed divinities and so forth, Anpu and Anput. But you will find that, of course, Anpu, the deity Anpu, the jackal-headed divinity, he is the son of Nebit-Het. And, of course, Nebit-Het, as we've shown, she's called Akua and Akan, also Awurakua. She's called Ur-Hekau, which is Awurakua and Akan. She's called that in ancient Kemet. Nebit-Het, her husband is Set. She's called Agberu in the Yoruba tradition, the wife of Eshu, and Koni Koni, the wife of Legba and Bodun. She's Akua, the wife of Awuku and Akan. Nebit-Het, she's the one who governs the renal system in creation, the fluid balancing system in creation. She governs the clouds that get full of rain and so forth. She governs the rain, waters of earth, and so forth. But her son is Anpu. Anpu marries Anpu and gives birth to Kebhid or Kebeha, who deals with the libation. So while Akua or Nebit-Het governs the rain, waters of earth, and produces the rain, waters of earth, and her great clouds, she produces those waters and secretes, you know, does secretions through the renal system in the body, and the kidneys are like those great vessels that deal with the fluid balance in the body. The clouds deal with the fluid balance on the planet and so forth, the fluid balance through the rainwater and so forth. She generates, you know, the rainwaters and so forth, but her granddaughter releases those rainwaters in the form of libation and governs that process, that ritual process of release. So there's a direct relationship between Anput and Anpu, the mother and father of Kevhid, and Nebit-Het, the grandmother of Kevhid or Kebeha, dealing with the rainwaters and so forth. So, and we've talked about Akua Nebit-Het in our broadcast, a couple of broadcasts dealing with her, and we'll be dealing more with that in our Akradim Bosom series in that section. So this is the direct relationship. Libation, the original libation, is rain water. Of course, we deal with the physical aspect of that. We know how it affects earth and how it affects our bodies and so forth. But the spiritual force operant and animate through rainwater is Kevhid, that cool, refreshing, magnetic, contractive force that allows us to cleanse ourselves, purify ourselves, remove physical and spiritual energetic debris, so that we can restore equilibrium. The restoration of equilibrium leads to the restoration of receptivity, heightened receptivity, proper receptivity, so we can attune ourselves to the forces in nature, the Abosom, and our Nananom and Samampo, our spiritually cultivated ancestors and ancestors, so we can make good decisions and incorporate law and restore balance to our lives on a consistent basis. She is key for all of that. That happens physically and spiritually on earth, but of course, within the physical body, as we said, the shrines, for her is the eccrine gland, glandular system, the sweat glands and so forth, releasing that water that purifies us, that cleanses us, that rejuvenates us, that cools us down and helps us to become more receptive, whether it's through being overheated with regard to a certain activity or even ritual activity, sexual activity, whatever it is. Then we release that water. There's a direct connection with the water and the energy within that water to the energy of Kephi within the atmosphere and so forth. We create that circuit, that unbroken circuit, that circuit of energy, that link of energy and so forth, so we can purify ourselves, rejuvenate ourselves, and so forth. We also have this process in the Hoodoo tradition. Of course, Afro-Akaini traditions in different aspects all over the continent as well as in the Western Hemisphere, but we're talking about Akanpo Nanasom today. So in the Hoodoo tradition, we invoke Kabeha as well through this notion of the collection of rainwater, collection of Osu, as it's called, Nakana, rainwater, not only for purification, but also for divination. We've collected rainwater for thousands of years. It became especially prominent, an especially prominent practice here, especially in the Hoodoo tradition, because, of course, if you're on a plantation in North America, you don't have access to going down to a river to purify yourself and engage in ritual practice, or a stream, or the ocean, or a lakefront, and so forth. You're locked, landlocked on a plantation. Your movements are restricted and so forth. So the only natural flow of water, not talking about water from a well that's being, you know, collected and so forth, but only natural free-flowing water that you have access to if you're on a plantation is rainwater. So we would collect that rainwater in specific vessels and so forth, engage the ritual process to invoke Kabeha, even if we didn't know her name or remember her name specifically. And the deity possesses, they would tell us their names and so forth. We collect that rainwater. It's infused with Kabeha's energy. We purify our heads, purify our bodies, engage in ritual purification for our children and so forth. But also use that water not just for purification, but also for pouring libation to communicate with the ancestresses and ancestors and create a strong bond, but also pouring that water in the vessel after libation so we can utilize that water for divination, for water gazing, for communication through that water medium with the, I don't know, in Sumafo, the spiritually cultivated ancestresses and ancestors, and with the Abosom, with the deity. And we still engage that process today. We collect that rainwater to wash our heads, purify our heads, energize it through ritual invocation, drawing the Abosom to that water source that we've collected, drawing our Nananom and Sumafo, our spiritually cultivated ancestresses and ancestors, to that water source that we've collected, purify ourselves with that energized water, but also utilize it for libation, but also utilize it for water gazing, for divination, so we can communicate, learn what we need to learn, find out what's taking shape, so we can avoid negative consequences, potential negative consequences or events and so forth, preempt certain things, wage war against our enemies through chemical and biological warfare and so forth, a number of different things. This is all inclusive with regard to those ritual practices. So now if you have any questions or comments, you can hit the number 1 on the phone line. With regard to that information, of course, you must log in as a user in the chat room in order to interact. But that is the information we wanted to deal with in the context of the Hoodoo tradition and that use of rainwater for not only for ritual purification, ritual libation, of course, which is communication, which is a form of ritual prayer, just like you have ritual song, ritual dance, chant, and so forth, a number of different forms of communicating with the Nsamanfo. Pouring libation is another form of ritual invocation, ritual prayer. So, and it's used, as we said, extensively in Akan culture, inclusive of the Hoodoo tradition in North America. But because of that process and because it's used so extensively, and because it became very important, especially being landlocked on plantations and didn't have any access to any other forms of naturally flowing water. So that became very important to us, whereas you may normally go to a river in the Akan tradition if you're going to wash your kra, wash your soul, your krawa, in the Akragwade, or soul washing ceremony or ritual. You would go to the river of your Ntoro, your Ejabosom, the Patrick clan, Abosom, Patrick clan divinity you've inherited through your Patrick clan and so forth. You would go into the river of that divinity. You would utilize that river water to wash your crop. So rivers are very sacred. But if you didn't have access to a river because you're on a plantation, you're plotting to escape, but you haven't been able to do that yet. You don't have access to a river, you don't have access to a stream, you don't have access to a lake, you don't have access to the ocean front and so forth. The only naturally flowing water is the rainwater, is the water of Kebhit. And of course, she obliged us. She assisted us in that process. She understood what we were going through, so we're collecting that rainwater in large vessels, sometimes small vessels, but sometimes large vessels, and creating a quote-unquote miniature lake or a miniature river or a miniature stream ourselves. And then we utilize that water to purify ourselves, but also use it, as we said, for Adebisa, for divination. So it became very important. Rainwater became very important for us. Our relationship with Kabeha or Kepit became very important to us, more prominent than it would be if we were living on the continent of Afraka, Afraikai. If we were living on the continent, we would utilize river water, streams, the ocean, lakes, as well as rainwater, all in balance. We come over here, and even some of us here, even though we're, of course, not on plantations now because our people forced the end of enslavement through waging war, so we have them to thank for that. But many of us are living in areas and cities and landlocked areas and so forth where we don't have, of course, we're nowhere near the ocean. We're not near a lake. We may not be near a large river and so forth. May not be near a stream. It may be far away before we can get to a river and so forth, very, you know, far before we can get to one. And once again, this relationship with Kepit, Kebeha, and this rainwater, this naturally flowing water, as opposed to using water from the sink and so forth, we want that naturally flowing water directly from nature without any interference, without any modification and so forth, without any filtering and so forth. We get it directly from rainwater. We don't have to be near a stream or a river or a lake or a pond or ocean and so forth. We can get those vessels, fill up that water, utilize it for ritual cleansing, purifying the head, the entire body, for pouring libation, but also for divination. And, of course, this is what we're going to be dealing with in our film. We talked about Amarukapo Adebisa Ajumadi, African-American Ancestral Divination Project. This film that we are working on, we've been working on for over a year. We started that filming process, which is the final steps, back in April in Florida, and then we went to New Orleans and through Alabama and Georgia. We have a couple of more places to film in Ohio and Virginia and so forth, and we'll be done with the filming process. Our goal is to finish that within the next 7 days with regard to filming and complete the post-production piece so we can have the film ready by the end of June, beginning of July. So we're in that process right now. We're dealing with the forms of divination we preserve in our blood circles here in North America. Hoodoo tradition, Akan tradition will be represented. The Juju tradition, which is the Yoruba tradition in North America, will be represented. The Voodoo tradition, which is the Evanfone tradition, will be represented. The Wanga tradition, which is the Ovambo tradition, manifest of the Gullah tradition in North America, will be represented. The Fang tradition, F-A-N-G, the Fang tradition, which is Ngengang, sometimes pronounced Nganga, but Ngengang and the Fang tradition, we represented myself, Voodoo Queen Kalinda Laveau out of New Orleans, Rekik Kajara Nia Ya Nebihet, who was based in Georgia, Wabet Seshatut Akwajet, who is based in Florida, Mama Mawusi Ashakir, who is based in Ohio now. All of us will be in the film showcasing these divination forms of divination that have been maintained in our blood circles for the past 300 years here in North America, showing that we have maintained our ancestral religious practices. We are not dependent on anyone outside of our direct ancestral blood circles for our ancestral religious practice. We're not dependent on anyone in the Caribbean and South America, Central America, or Afraka, Afrakai, Africa for initiations into priesthoods or priestesshoods, because we have maintained those priesthoods and priestesshoods in our blood circles here in North America for the past 300 plus years. The Hoodoo man and Hoodoo woman is the priest class and priestess class in the Akan tradition and the Hoodoo tradition. The Juju man and Juju woman are the Yoruba priest and priestess class in North America. The Wanga man and Wanga woman are the priest and priestess class in the Ovambo and Gullah tradition in North America. That Ngengai man and Ngengai woman, the Fang tradition in North America. The Voodoo man, Voodoo woman are, you know, the priest and priestess class in the Ebe and Fone tradition preserved in our blood circles in North America. So we have these traditions. We have our divination systems. We engage in ancestral and deity possession, communication, and therefore the traditions have never been lost. You cannot lose an ancestral tradition when you can be possessed by the ancestresses and ancestors who founded the tradition and the deities, the forces in nature that govern the tradition and have governed the tradition for tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of years. So we have that capacity, and this is what we're dealing with. For those of you who know about the, as we mentioned earlier, we have our June 24th, our third annual Ojira Mind Conference here in Washington, D.C., Sunday, June 24th, which is coming up in less than 2 weeks. The conference is all day. It's a free conference, as all of our conferences are. We'll be giving away a free copy of one of our books, the new Ojira Mind Apache book, which will be released on that day. We will have our Egua Marketplace vendors available all day. We will have presentations on Amanye nationism, the purification of nationalism, the different aspects of nation building rooted in our ancestral religious practices, Ojira Mind Apache, the purified nation, Afurakani, Afurakani in America, in the Western Hemisphere, Afurakani, Afurakani people in the Western Hemisphere. This is our conference dealing with nation building from a rooted, grounded, ancestral religious values perspective, third annual conference, so you will see all of the information there. We do have a couple of spaces left for vending. If you would like to vend at that event, you can go to our page, fill out the vendor registration form and so forth, and we have a couple of spaces left. We provide 1 6-foot table and 2 chairs. The fee for vending is $30 for the entire day, and we provide, once again, a 6-foot table and 2 chairs. Also, if you have a business, organization, or institution, and you would like to showcase that business in our book, we need those JPEG files immediately because we only have 2 weeks left. The deadline was actually last week, but if you still would like to submit your business, organization, or institution for an ad to place in our book, send those JPEG files immediately. You can go to the page and make the payment. We have a 1/4 page, a 1/2 page, or a full page ad. They're in full color, all of them. 1/4 page is $25. 1/2 page is 35, a full page, 8.5 by 11 size is 50. That book will be given away for free to all of our conferees. It will be, the ebook version will be placed on our website as a permanent free download, and then we also sell the soft cover version of the book. We've averaged 3 million hits on our website over the past 2 years, 3 million hits per year. So we have our 30 books. This will be our 31st book. But we have our books on the website. The ebook versions are free downloads. So we have thousands of people downloading our free books on a monthly basis. About 4,500 people per month download the free books. So when that book is placed there, that'll be one of the books that people are downloading for free every month. So $125 ad for your business will be seen by thousands of people perpetually from now on. That will be a permanent free download. So that $125 ad will be seen by thousands of people on a monthly basis from now on. So if you'd like to place your business, your organization, or your institution in the book, we need those JPEG files immediately. We are formatting the book now. And also, finally, also, of course, for those of you who have been looking forward to this film coming out, we reached 75% of our crowdfunding goal of about a week ago. We are trying to get to the 100% so we can complete this film. We are wrapping up filming. We're trying to complete that process, but we do need assistance. So if you have not yet had a chance to contribute to our crowdfund effort for the film, please do so. Take a minute or so just to go to our page. It only takes a minute to make a quick donation. Any amount is welcome, but we do need assistance from the community to complete the process. We've had about 142 people over the past year make a contribution. Many people made more than one contribution. That's why when you look on the page, it says 142 contributors, but there have been about 270-plus contributions. That's because some of the 142 people have contributed more than once. That's why it's like 270-plus contributions. So we've reached 72% of our crowdfunding goal. But as we said in previous broadcasts, when you look at our piece, we have thousands of people, 4,500 on average downloads of our free books on a monthly basis. We have 55,000 downloads of our books over the past 12 months. So we have thousands of people gaining access to the information, improving their lives. We get emails from people on a regular basis saying how the work has transformed their lives and the lives of their children and their families and so forth. So if you want one of those people who derived a benefit from the work that we are doing and you have not yet had a chance to contribute, please contribute today, because we need to get to the 100% as soon as possible so that we can complete the film as soon as possible so we can release the film. The scheduled date was always at the end of June. We did have to reschedule one of our filming segments. Instead of doing the filming for this particular segment in Georgia, we're going to be doing that filming in Virginia, which is a good thing. But we had to do that recently. We had to reschedule that over the past week. But we can still finish the filming on schedule if we get the support. We have to travel to some more places. This is where expenses are coming from, as well as the equipment. So if you have not yet had a chance to contribute and you do value the work that we are doing, starve the beast and feed the pride. Take the funds you may have spent. Maybe you were going to spend $10 at a white-owned restaurant or gas station like or CVS, 7-Eleven to get some food or some snacks or something, or somewhere else. Starve the beast and feed the pride today and reallocate those funds away from the white business to support our effort. And yet I say we thank you to everyone who has contributed and who will contribute, who are starving the beast and feeding the pride. This information, once the film is released, it will impact our people on a larger scale. We're getting people off of these fake religions, which we have done for years. Expose the fact that Jesus, Moses, Muhammad, Abraham, Isaac, Ishmael, Solomon, Sheba, Menelik, Buddha, Brahman, all these fictional characters, Allah, Yahweh, are fictional characters who never existed of any form or of any race whatsoever. All of these fake religions we are eliminating, eradicating, and reestablishing our people firmly in their ancestral and traditions, ancestrally inherited traditions that we've maintained in our blood circles that have sustained us, the reason why we were able to engage in these revolution resolutions and so forth. It's because we maintained our ancestral religious practices and we were guided and empowered on the best means to wage war against the whites and their offspring. It is those who maintain ancestral religious practices who waged those wars that were effective that are responsible for us being free today. So this is what we're going to be documenting in the film. So once again, please support that effort. The fundraising link is on the page. And so that's the information we wanted to go over tonight. If you have any other questions, questions or comments and so forth, just hit us up on Facebook or on the regular website. And once again, Yerase, we thank you for tuning into this broadcast. And Yebeshia Bio, we will meet again. It's up.